Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Network Saturday, October 14th, 2017. This is episode 1430. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom. Keep your business moving forward and let LegalZoom help out with all the legal stuff. For special savings, visit LegalZoom.com and enter Tech Guy in the referral box at checkout. And by Felix Gray. Give your eyes the break they deserve with Felix Gray glasses. Their lenses filter blue light and eliminate glare from screens without the telltale yellow tint or color distortion of other computer glasses. Go to felixgrayglasses.com/techguy and try a pair today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We've got wireless charging. We've got augmented reality. We've got virtual reality. We've got the whole spectrum of technology devices that are changing our lives every day, anything with a chip in it. Now, if you have a question or you want to make a comment or a suggestion or you want some help, this is the place. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada, outside that area. You can still reach me. You just call, collect. Don't call, collect, actually. We don't want collect calls. Call via Skype. Use your Skype out and call that toll-free number. It shouldn't cost you anything anywhere in the world. 8888-ASK-LEO. And we'd love to hear from you. We have a website, techguylabs.com. If you go to the website, that'll be a place you can find everything I talk about on the show. So you don't have to write anything down. You don't have to remember anything. Well, one thing, you have to remember techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And there's no charge. There's no sign up. I don't charge for anything I do. I'd prefer to let the advertisers pay the freight and give it all to you for free. So please take advantage of that, techguylabs.com. There's not even a sign up. Unless you want to leave a comment, you got to sign up for that. You don't really sign up, but you can use we want you to log in with your Twitter or your Google or your Facebook, some account, so we can keep the spammers at bay. That's always a good idea, keeping the spammers. Spam isn't the problem anymore, is it? I mean, I think anybody who's still getting spam is probably not using the best options out there. If you use Google's Mail, for instance, I think that's the best right now, Gmail. Their anti-spam filtering is automatic. You don't have to do anything. It's extremely effective because it's crowdsourced anti-spam. So if you ever do get spam on Gmail, there's a button, and you push the button, say, this is spam, and it'll say, oh, so sorry, and it'll move into the spam folder. But enough people do that with any given email, then the Google engine will say, from now on, this is spam. See, humans are better at detecting spam than computers. Computers miss it sometimes. They can be fooled. And spammers do everything. If you ever look at any spam that you get, look in your spam folder. They are trying hard to fool the computers. But you can't fool a human. Humans know spam. That's not so much a problem anymore. Now it's scams, not spams. It's too bad. I think we are fooled a lot by scams. It's all kinds of them. And if you listen to the show, you hear it all the time. People call in and say, well, a guy called me from Microsoft and said my computer had a virus. No. And in a couple of months, get ready because it'll all be from the IRS. My wife got one yesterday. It was the funniest thing. First of all, the person doesn't speak English very well. So that's kind of a giveaway that they're not really the IRS. Well, I mean, I would expect the IRS, if they have recordings going out, they'd have somebody who speaks English record them. In any event, this recording had a real tone of urgency. You must call us right away because your account is at risk and blah, blah, blah. And of course, they scare people. That's how they get you to act without thinking. You know, the fear, I have to act right away, right? That means don't think, just call them or email them or do whatever it is the scammer needs for you to, in the long run, give him money. Don't fall for it. IRS doesn't call you at home, nor does Microsoft. Almost all of these are scam. I tell people, if I get a call and I could tell it's a scam, I'll say, shame on you. Does your mother know you're trying to scam people? I don't know if that works. I'm just hoping that, enough people say that, maybe they'll think twice about their career choices. I don't know. I'm a little scared about this AC/DC Act. This is a little scary. Don't think this is a good idea. Introduced in Congress, AC/DC, which I think they like that acronym, but it stands for Active Cyber Defense Certainty Act, which means nothing, right? But they wanted it to be AC/DC. This is what it does, and I think this is a terrible idea. It basically introduces vigilante justice to the internet. It allows individuals and companies to hack hackers back. Oh, please. According to Tom Graves of Georgia, one of the representatives who introduced this, the certainty the bill provides will empower individuals and companies to use new defenses against cyber criminals. I also hope it spurs a new generation of tools and methods to level the lopsided cyber battlefield, if not give an edge to cyber defenders. So, it's just a bill. And if I remember my Schoolhouse Rock, it isn't a law yet. The bill doesn't allow you to destroy anything except your own files, if you can find them. And if you hack back, you have to notify the FBI that you're doing it. I think it's fine to say you can have strong defenses, but to say now you can turn the tables on these guys and go out and get them. What do you think? Seems like a Wild West out there. I mean, are you going seems it's like it's asking for trouble. You know what happens is people will write poorly written measures to take down hackers, which will then escape and take down everybody else. The vice president of community and public affairs at a security firm, Rapid7, said, "This is. Can you reasonably expect someone to go guns blazing and not harm the wrong computers? It's easy to inadvertently damage systems. Lots of attacks leverage third-party assets that were also hacked. Remember that it's hard to know if, in fact, this is to me the biggest problem. It's hard to know if the attack really is coming from the site it seems to be." Do you ever, people used to call me all the time, said, "Oh, I figured it out. I got some spam and I figured it out where it came from and I'm bombarding them." Usually bombarding some innocent person who is hacked by spammers. You know, the return address on your spam mail is not where it came from, right? You know that, right? They're not putting their own return address in there. It's some other poor slob's return address. And even if you... And, you know, oh, no, I'm more sophisticated than that. I don't look at the return address. I go down and I examine the email for the originating server. No, bogus also. And that's what's going to happen with it. This can't become a law. This is just, again, I'm sad to say, another example of technical ignorance from our members of Congress trying to do the right thing. I understand, but really doing completely the wrong thing. We must continue working toward the day when the norm, not the exception, is for criminal hackers to be identified and prosecuted. I agree. By law enforcement, not by some poor CPA in Peoria, Illinois, who says, I figure it out. It's you, Leo. You're doing it to me, and I'm going to attack you. No, that's guns a-blazing. That's the Wild West. That's not what we need. Oy. It's just the whole law is crazy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Do you think you agree? Or do you? Oh, could Equifax get any worse? I got to do one more real quickie. Equifax has a page that you go to. This is the credit reporting agency that was hacked. Remember, released 145 plus million accounts by accident to a bad guy. They have a page where you can report errors in your credit report. That page had malware on it, adware. They said it wasn't our fault. It was some third party we were using. Oh, please. Could these guys get any worse? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Lo and behold, look who's here. Kim Schaffer.
I made it.
You're surviving the wildfires. We're still having still fires up north
in
Northern California.
This has become the new accessory.
Okay. I see people. In fact, I've taken pictures of people walking around with these surgical masks on. Does that help?
I haven't actually worn it yet because I've tried to tried to stay inside as much as possible. I've got a major case of cabin fever, but
it's smoky. Yeah,
it's nothing compared to what everybody up there is.
Feel like you probably should get a real like gas mask with canisters and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you see everybody around town; they're all wearing these. These masks, it's better than nothing.
Exactly,
it's very smoky. We are not. Just for people who are curious, we're not get anywhere near the fires here. We're about 10 miles away, but
that's getting close.
They get closer and closer.
If you look at the span between Geyserville and Sonoma,
they're getting closer and closer.
It's scary.
Yeah. So, but boy, our thoughts and prayers
Love. We all know someone or many people.
We know lots of people evacuated. I know. Three families, at least, whose homes were burnt to the ground, destroyed utterly. And most of those people just got out.
With seconds.
Within seconds. Yeah. They were just with what they were wearing, often their jammies, because it happened at midnight on Monday morning, and they often had no warning. They just ran out the door, and that was that. They were lucky if they got out. Many did not, unfortunately.
My brother had about 3 hours, I think. Yeah. I think he woke up at midnight and saw it in the distance and packed up some stuff and ran, and he's a mile from that Coffee Park area. So
yeah, isn't that terrible? You look at those pictures of that Santa Rosa neighborhood that just got hit so hard, and it looks like it just got flattened.
Yeah, it looks like Mars.
Flattened like Mars. Anyway, thank you. Reason I mention this, we've gotten a lot of tweets and emails saying, are you guys okay?
Yes,
here. Everybody in our staff is fine. I don't think anybody on our staff has been evacuated, to my knowledge.
I don't think so.
Maybe Moses. I'll have to ask him because there was an evacuation last night, and I think he was in that area of Santa Rosa. But anyway, thank you for your thoughts. And everybody here is really kicking into high gear. Donations and volunteering.
There's actually too much. They're turning stuff away.
They're turning people away now. They're saying,
wait a week.
We don't need more food, water, bedding, supplies. We're good.
Yeah.
We're good. We need help with volunteering, I guess, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's our local problem here. But other people have problems all over the world, and they're calling us. Begging for help.
I was going to throw you a softball to begin the day, but you were just talking about that tiny
hardware firewall.
Thingy.
Yeah,
and there's
a guy asking about
with a question about that on line 2, Joseph in New Jersey. So I'll let you talk.
You can
to him
throw
first.
Me a softball. I'm not against it. Thank you, Kim. I appreciate it. Hey, Joseph from New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm a longtime listener, first time caller, and you showed on the live view. The tiny hardware firewall, and I have a question about it.
Sure. So let me just explain what's going on so people are up to speed. Obviously, you are. There's a company out of Washington, D.C. called Wi-Fi Consulting, and I've been recommending for a couple of years now. They make a really clever solution for people who want to use coffee shops and other, hotel Wi-Fi or Ethernet, other Internet access safely. And we've said before, it's a little risky because you're now joining a network that doesn't necessarily have any security on it. Anybody else on that network, which could be the guy sitting next to you in the coffee shop, can get to you and sometimes can mess with you in a variety of ways when you're on that network. So people really want to preserve their privacy and their security but still want to use these kind of open networks at airports, hotels, coffee shops, can use a variety of devices. The one I've recommended is at tinyhardwarefirewall.com. And it's a hardware device. It's a router that you plug in to your USB port or your Ethernet jack. And if you have one, most laptops don't anymore. And then you go through it, and it protects you in a variety of ways. One, because it's a router. Two, because if you wish, you can also turn on virtual private networking, VPN, which will protect you even more. And you can anonymize yourself with these things, which is maybe even the third step using Tor. So these things are pretty sophisticated little routers in a USB key, basically. So there's the background. What's your question?
The question is that I looked at the pricing online, and it says that it's $35 for the Napoleon, but there's also $99 charge for the use of their VPN, and right underneath where they list that price, it says recurring charge.
Yes.
And I prefer TunnelBear as VPN.
That's completely legit. They don't do a hardware solution, that's all. So the idea of this is the company that sells this, Wi-Fi Consulting, is taking basically generic hardware, these little USB dongles and devices and radios and stuff, and modifying it so it uses their service, which either is Tiny Hardware Firewall, or they have a new service called the Black Hole Cloud Service, which is a little different than a traditional VPN. Each person who uses it has their own dedicated server, which means it's pretty fast. But yes, it's not, at least unless the new one is, which I have just received in the mail today, so I haven't set it up. It cannot be configured for a third-party firewall. Now, the reason, when I first started using this, you paid the firewall fee and the hardware was free. But they've now started charging an additional, $35, kind of a small amount, but still a charge for the hardware. But you do need to keep renewing this every year and use their VPN, which you may or may not want to do.
Right, and I don't. And do you have an alternative to the Tiny Hardware Firewall from some other supplier?
Well, I would, I don't think TunnelBear, which is a very good VPN service. One of the things you're looking for with VPN services is one that doesn't do any logging, that doesn't keep track of who's using it. That's part of the important anonymization of it. It doesn't have anything to do with the security of it. It just means that you're surfing completely privately, even from law enforcement subpoenas, things like that. So a lot of people who use VPNs use it for both, protect themselves against their ISP or snoops. But then they may also want to use it to protect themselves against unlawful search and seizure. And so that's an issue. So that's something you might want to look at. TunnelBear does do that. They delete their logs on the fly, so there's no immediate record, no searchable record, no subpoenable record of your use. So that's one reason people like TunnelBear. And TunnelBear's fast. It's a very good service. It's ineffective. I guess in order to use it with a hardware device like this, unless they offer one pre-configured, you need to go buy one. And you can buy these. These are Marvell-based for the most part. That's an inexpensive embedded chip. They sell them on eBay. You just look for USB router or travel router. There are a lot of companies that make these, and those can be configured to use any VPN. But let me ask these guys if now that they're selling these separately, if they make it more configurable. I'm gonna plug it into my machine. I'm gonna look at the configuration settings, and since you're watching the live stream, you could plug it in with me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't mind using their service. But if you wanted to use it, in fact, I like their service. But
well,
that is an issue, of course.
Wasn't TunnelBear just recently audited, and I've read people say that they preferred TunnelBear to something else?
Well, perhaps. I mean, TunnelBear, the thing people care about with VPNs, a couple of things. One, of course, that the VPN isn't injecting stuff into your stream, changing ads and stuff like that. That's like that's the worst behavior. Wi-Fi Consulting obviously doesn't do that. I haven't checked into their log behavior, because that's the next level up, is not logging. But that has nothing to do with securing your privacy at a coffee shop or security at a coffee shop or from an ISP. That has to do with worrying about government subpoenas. I'm not particularly worried about government subpoenas. That's not
something. The issue of the VPN aside, it's still a $100 yearly charge in order to use that.
Don't do it. Tiny hardware firewall. I'm not making you do it.
I'm just saying that's why I'm looking for some kind of a hardware alternative that I would buy it.
How much do you pay for TunnelBear?
I'm not sure. I think it's about $60 a year.
Okay. So, yeah, I would not use a VPN that you don't pay because obviously there's other ways to monetize and they must be using those because it costs money to use a for them to run those servers. Mm-hmm. So I feel like $90 a year is a fair amount. But, so what you need to do is go on to eBay, and I'll see if I can find some sources for this, but go on to eBay or somewhere and just get one of these devices. They're just repurposing. You know, all of these are just Chinese – inexpensive Chinese computer devices. Let me pull this
up. You said Marvel-based?
They're Marvel-based, usually, yeah. But if you look at actually what you could do is go to tinyhardwarefirewall.com, take one of their pictures and drag it to Google Image Search, and you'll find all of these. These are not – they're not building these themselves. They're probably customizing the firmware somewhat. But all of this stuff is made by third parties, for use. By anybody. So this is you can get this kind of, that would be a good project for us. I'm going to have to look and maybe we could do a project on this because that would be a lot of fun. I trust these Wi-Fi consulting guys. I know they're very good. Hotspot VPN has been around for a long time. If you want to look at the Hotspot VPN reviews and see if they live up to your standards, that's worth it. TunnelBear has a nice, cute icon. They've been an advertiser, I should say. Hotspot VPN has not. So I have nothing against TunnelBear. In fact, I highly recommend them. But, to my knowledge, they don't offer hardware. Scott Wilkinson is editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. It's good to see you again, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
Writing all sorts of stuff. Lots of review. Wait a minute. A review of the Blu-ray of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? I know that's not you. That's your colleague.
No, but that's my colleague, Ralph Potts. He writes all the Blu-ray reviews and Ultra HD Blu-ray reviews.
Oh, that's so funny. Did this come out? It must have.
It must have.
How funny.
It must have. They must have it's an old movie. Hilarious movie.
Yeah. Those aren't pillows.
That's not my pillow.
D-line, right? D-line. But I also noticed you did a review of a new Vizio. We had a caller last week asking about he wanted to get an OLED. And he wanted to get an inexpensive OLED. Okay, there's your answer right there.
Doesn't quite exist.
Ho, ho, ho. Oh, ho, ho. But what about this Vizio TV? This is an LCD, but is in a UHD to boot. Is this he wanted to spend around $2,000.
Oh, well, this is well under that. This is a 65-inch for $1,200.
Wow.
And it's got a lot going for it, really. It's Ultra HD, so 4K as it's commonly called. HDR, high dynamic range, both HDR10, which is the most common one in Ultra HD Blu-ray, and Dolby Vision, which is coming on UHD Blu-ray. There are a few titles out and more to come, and it's common now in streaming from Netflix and Amazon and so on.
Do I care about Dolby Vision in my TV, though? Isn't it?
Oh, I think so. You should.
Really?
I absolutely do. Because
of Dolby streaming.
Because of streaming.
Yeah, if you're using the smart TV, that's going to be – the decoding is going to go on in the TV.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And now – I mean, the streaming services, I believe they've – a lot of them have adopted Dolby Vision as their HDR of choice. But if you don't have a TV that does it, but that does do HDR10, the other common format – then I believe those streaming services will offer you HDR10. So it's either way.
HDR, I'll just do a quick explainer. People are going, what are they talking about? High dynamic range is the latest thing in television. It only comes on the new ultra high def sets, the 4K TV sets. Why is that, by the way? Couldn't it come on a 1080p high
def? It could, but there's no... Nobody does it. There's no standard for it in high definition, in 1080p.
The idea is it's got a broader range between the blackest blacks and the whitest whites. So it really is more vivid, more realistic. And by the way, vivid can be an unrealistic thing.
Right. The vivid mode, when you take a TV out of a box and there are these modes, vivid mode is very unrealistic.
Yeah. But, so when you say vivid,
I use the word rich.
Rich is a good word.
Rich colors.
But it's more accurate, ultimately.
It's a wider range of black to white, as you say. Also, a wider range of colors.
Yeah.
So instead of 16 million colors, you have a billion colors. What that really means... ultimately, is that the colors remain saturated as they get brighter. With SDR, or standard dynamic range, as the colors get brighter, they tend to desaturate and move toward white. And with high dynamic range, that happens much later, much at a much brighter level. So bright colors stay colorful. They don't get washed out as they do in standard dynamic range. So that's another really big, important part of this high dynamic range or HDR story. And this new Vizio, as I said, does both HDR 10 and Dolby Vision. I tend to prefer Dolby Vision, although I have to tell you, I wrote about this in the review. I did a comparison between, I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is a great movie, really fun. And I watched it on Ultra HD Blu-ray, which was HDR 10, this one of two main formats. And then I watched it also on Vudu, which provided it, which streamed it in Dolby Vision HDR. So I could compare the two. Now, what I really wanted to do was cue them up so that I could switch back and forth and do that quickly. But Vudu doesn't let you do that. If you switch away from the smart TV function and then go back to it, you have to go back into Vudu and it takes a while. So it wasn't as good of a comparison as I would have liked. I was surprised at how little difference there was between the two. Even with that glitch of having to wait and go back and forth, the HDR 10 and the Vudu Dolby Vision, very close, very close.
Really?
I generally have said I think Dolby Vision is better for a technical reason called dynamic metadata. We could talk about that, but it's a little complicated. But basically, it represents the bright parts of the picture separately for each scene or even down to each frame. HDR 10 only represents the brightest part of the entire movie. So Dolby Vision has an advantage in that regard, but I have to say I didn't see that much difference between them in this case. So that was a little eye-opening. Everything about this Vizio TV is great. With one possible exception, I didn't find the black levels or the blacks to be that deep. And I'm a sucker for black levels. I have an OLED here at home. You have one in your home.
Oh, yeah.
And the blacks on an OLED are so deep, so inky, that it really makes the rest of the image pop. The Vizio's not bad, but I'm now used to OLED blacks.
Yeah.
And so the LCDs, very few LCDs can compare. And this one doesn't quite. Now, if you're in – and I was watching in a very dark room, in a blacked-out room. If you're in a more common environment, a living room, media room with the windows open or the lights are on, grandma's sewing in the corner, kids are playing in the other corner, I don't think these blacks are going to be that big a problem because when you're in ambient light, the blacks look black. So in many cases, it's not really a particular problem. But for a video file like me, yeah, I'd rather have darker blacks.
Yeah, yeah. So for the price, though, this is not bad.
Oh,
right?
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
What's the $1,200 for a 65-inch TV that does all that? It's remarkable.
What is the least expensive OLED one? Is that the LG?
It's the LG C7 or the B7, which is what's called a captive model, which is only – I forget exactly where they sell it. Might be Costco, might be – you know, one of the big box stores, one or another of them has
exclusive with these stores.
It's a kind of an exclusive with one or another store. Yeah. But the C7, I'd have to look it up.
But it's, people can look for themselves.
Yeah, it's it's probably, I mean, a 55 inch, you're probably under $3,000. I mean, that's still a lot of money.
Yeah, but okay, so yeah, well, it's twice as much as the Vizio, but still, their list, you know, their list price on a 65 is $29.99.
Oh, for the LG C7?
Yeah, that's okay. But that's on
so
the
that's
big
three
one.
Grand. That's a big one. That's the same size as the one I looked at.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're shopping for a TV, get the biggest size you can afford, and that will fit.
Yeah.
Because people always get almost always get a TV that is too small.
I know. 55 inches was $19.99.
He said
he was 8 feet away. Would a 55 be okay for 8 feet, or does he need to get bigger?
I would get a 65.
Yeah.
55's okay, but 65 would be better.
We're spoiled. Scott Wilkinson, he's the editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, where he has just reviewed the newest Vizio Value TV.
Yes.
And reviews things all the time there and joins us each week. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Zonk.
All right. Let's see.
Yeah, Jay's got it right. Baby Groot dance time. That's such a great opening. The title.
That fight sequence. Holy
cow. Man, with Baby Groot dancing around.
Holy cow. It is wild.
It is. It's great.
Yeah.
You have to see the first. Did you see Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
I did. I really like Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did too. Did you see the first one first?
Of course.
Because there's a setup there.
Yeah,
exactly right.
All right, I will, if you can stick around, I will give you the floor. And can you do the top of the hour too?
Sure.
You're the man. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure. So Beatmaster asked, does this mean that I'm less hesitant about getting UHD over streams? Based on that experience, yes, I am. I mean, I'm not hesitant about getting it. I think it requires a lot of bandwidth to do well, coming into your home, I mean. And you need, obviously, the TV to display it properly. But I was surprised at how little difference I saw. And the Vudu stream was very low noise. I also watched Marco Polo. You remember Marco Polo from Netflix? Great HDR, sort of a dramatization of Genghis Khan and Marco Polo. They made a sort of a supplemental half-hour show called Marco Polo 100 Eyes, which was about sort of the origin story of the priest who was blind. Genghis Khan blinded him, as it turns out. But he stayed and became the priest of the court and taught Marco Polo martial arts and so on. And I watched that on Netflix in Dolby Vision. I'm pretty sure it was in Dolby Vision also. And it was very noisy. There was a lot of noise. And that's what I've come to expect from streaming. But it wasn't there on Vudu. And I was quite surprised. Now, I watch most of my streaming on Netflix, but I'm going to have to now spend more time in Vudu because I think they might do a better job of noise suppression. It's still, and that often usually comes from compression because they have to data compress the stream in order to send it over the internet at a reasonable bandwidth. So it's much more compressed than UHD Blu-ray. In fact, I was going to answer a reader question. Somebody sent me an email about comparing UHD Blu-ray to streaming and what's the difference. And up till recently, I would have said there's a big difference. But this was quite surprising. So I need to do more work on that. Let's see. CO Bra, you're exactly right. Vudu is streaming and compressed more than not DVD, UHD Blu-ray. That is true. And that's why I'm surprised. I was quite surprised. And Beatmaster is correct. Blu-ray and Ultra HD Blu-ray is also compressed, just not as much. So I only have about 45 seconds left, but I'll be here at the top of the hour if you got any other questions. Chumley, $3,000 for a 65-inch C7 on Amazon. That's what Leo just found out, too. So the 55 is less than that. It's probably $2,000.
Yeah, it's $2,000.
Yeah. So, you know, if for a 55 in a
That's
studio
not bad.
Apartment.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
And it's the same. What I said to the guy last week was it's the same panel, isn't it?
Yes, on all of them.
Okay.
All of them.
Yeah.
All of them. It's exactly the same panel and the same video processing.
So you're giving up features, but not quality.
Correct.
Got it.
Correct.
You're going to stick around?
Beautiful thing about LG. Yeah, happy to.
See you in a second. Thank you. Yeah, we got to get our Scott fix. That's very important. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I've been playing with the new micro router from the Tiny Hardware Firewall people. I got it this morning, and so I haven't had a chance to play with it. Doesn't look like you can choose any other VPN. You got to use their tiny hardware firewall VPN, which is a hotspot VPN from Wi-Fi Consulting. And Hotspot also offers, which this works with, their new Black Hole Cloud, which is pretty fast. I turned on the VPN, it has ad blocking, and was getting about 5.7 megabits per second, which is, of course, not as fast as the connection. The connection is a gigabit connection, but 5.7 is pretty usable. Not bad, anyway. You can also turn on the Tor, but as far as I can tell, there's no way to use a different VPN provider. However, I will find somewhere there's got to be somebody who's put together a project, you know, using these generic hardware routers that can be configured to use a VPN. That's really all Wi-Fi Consulting's doing is they're buying these and changing the firmware. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones. George, Hollywood, California. Hello, George.
Hey, how are you, Leo? I am a big fan. I've been listening to you since the KGO days.
Wow.
In the early 90s.
You know, it's fun. So, right before I worked at KGO in San Francisco, I worked at KSFO, their sister station in San Francisco. And I'm very proud to say back on KSFO. So
in
radio, you never really leave anything behind. We're almost 200 stations now for the Tech Guy Network. That's pretty good.
We were very happy when I heard your name brought up here in Los Angeles on KFI, and I was like, oh, great, Leo.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
And I owe big time to KFI in Los Angeles because they were the ones who picked up the show back in 2004, and I was very pleased. What a great station to have as our
It's a great station.
Yep.
Great station. Yep. Hey, my daughter is turning 17, and she wants to have a camera, a more sophisticated camera, like a DSLR. But, you know, obviously, it can't be too complicated, right?
I mean, that's well, and at her age, this could be a hobby that she likes for 6 months and then moves on to something else, or she could be the next Avedon. And
who knows?
You just don't know. But you want to give kids, especially that age, that's such a formative age, you want to give them the opportunity. So you don't want to give them an Instamatic and say, well, here, see if you like photography. But you don't want to spend $5,000 on it either. What is your budget?
Right. Well, the budget doesn't matter. What I want is something that she can use and that is not – that like because I have a Nikon whatever D.
Oh, so you're a serious photographer. You know about this stuff.
Yeah, I have a few lenses and stuff.
Okay.
But my father was a really he had Hasselblads and Rolleiflex.
Wow,
and like
neat.
That.
Was he a pro or just an avid amateur?
Avid amateur. Although when he was a young man, he sold pictures of car accidents to the LA Times.
You're a Nikon shooter.
I shoot Nikon. I think Nikon may be too complicated in terms of the menu structure, but I don't know. My Nikon's a little bit older. What I would like to do is to get her something, and I don't want her to start, frankly, I don't want her to start taking my lenses either.
Okay. Because that's what I was going to say is if you have lenses you're willing to lend her, maybe your older, less expensive lenses, you know, then you would want to look at Nikon because she could buy a Nikon. A Nikon kit, the D3400 is $500 for the Nikon kit, and it will, it's the Nikon mount. So if dad decided this would be a good excuse for dad to upgrade to a nice lens and say, well, I'm always, you know, I can always give the old lens to my my daughter.
Right. I understand.
Wow, you have a phone. I haven't heard a phone that rings in years, except when people put the ringtone on their smartphone.
I'm sorry about that.
Is that a Western Electric? You know, that is one of those.
It is an old phone.
That's awesome.
I like it. Mid-century desk with mid-century,
I like it. That's very, very retro.
I'm going to have it all, like, go all the way.
So chat room gave me a bundle. This is from Costco. It's interesting you mentioned complexity because but this is a Nikon D3400. This is their APS-C sensor. So it's actually the same size. I think you said you had a D70?
That's what I have.
Yeah, is that a full frame? That might be full frame.
Yeah, I think it is.
So if you gave her, if you lent her a lens, it would be 1.6 times longer than it is on your, because of the crop factor. But this is a $600 kit that includes two lenses, an 18 to 55 and a 70 to 300. That's a really nice range. It includes a memory card, the body, of course, and a little, an extra battery and a little bag, plus an online class. You know, one of the reasons to go with Nikon, I loved that D70, by the way. That was my first DSLR. And that wasn't, in my opinion, even close to as complicated as modern cameras. So if you think that's complicated, any modern DSLR or even like a Micro Four Thirds, those menus go on for ages.
Yeah.
On the other hand, as you know, there's always the iAuto setting. You can put it on an auto setting, and then it is a point-and-shoot camera. And if she doesn't move it off of there, there's nothing to mess with.
Yeah, I get you on that. The only issue that I have is I'm wondering of those, like, I think you use an Olympus, the smaller one.
I am in love with the Olympus Micro Four Thirds is the standard they use. This is a smaller sensor even than APS-C, but it is a very interesting standard. Some of the most interesting stuff is being done by Olympus. Their OMD series is fantastic. My wife uses an EM1, gets better pictures than I do on my big old Canon 5D Mark IV. She's amazing. So, and it's light.
Is it complicated as well, or is it a pretty streamlined?
They're all, I don't know if there's an uncomplicated camera out there. You know, they all have many menus. So I don't.
Right.
I think you're going to have to live with it. I mean, you know what's not complicated? A film camera. Seriously. And it may be, I'll tell you what, that's a great discipline. You know, she would then have to really start shooting, probably want to shoot black and white film that she rolled herself because you want to keep the cost down as much as possible. There are still labs that can do it, but you could even, set up a small little darkroom. What a great, that's how probably you learned, certainly how I learned. How your dad learned. Yeah, that's how he learned. Yeah. But maybe that's going too far. That is a simple camera, though. You know, there's nothing simpler. Well, how about if you're willing to spend a little bit? Well, this is going to be too much.
Well, tell me.
Leica makes beautiful, very simple digital cameras. I have a Leica Q. It's not interchangeable lens. It's one lens at 28 millimeter, full frame. $4,000.
I
rejected it. However, very simple. It's as simple as a film camera, basically. You have knobs and that's it.
Well, and beautiful shot. My dad had a Leica.
Oh, they're the best.
With the rangefinder. Yeah,
they're the best. The best glass, the best everything. And this Leica Q is a remarkable camera, but it's kind of a crazy. I don't think Leica makes anything under $3,000 or $4,000, unfortunately. Now, you might look at used, and I was able to get a Leica M3 film camera used very inexpensively. And, I don't know. Do you have any of your dad's cameras?
My younger brother has them now.
He
got them.
Here's my strong recommendation. She can handle the complexity. You can set it so it's not complex and say, don't mess with the settings. This D3400 uses the Nikon mount, which is great. You know Nikon, so you'll at least be comfortable with the menus if you needed to get into them.
Right. And at that price,
$599, this is at Costco. It includes a 2-year warranty. This is a great starter camera for a teenager.
Okay.
You're not going to get anything this quality for that price.
Right. No. Time for me to go to Costco, I think.
I think this is the one. Yeah, I really do. Yeah. And you know what? This is part of, if she wants to be serious about photography, what you want is something that she can focus on initially, composition and, you know, thinking about the shots, not about the technology in the camera body. And then later, though, as time goes by, she gets the composition down and gets more advanced, she may end up saying, well, I'd like to know more about what I can do with this thing.
Right, right. And lighting and f-stops and apertures and things like that. I think that's right. But what I don't want is something that she looks at it and she says,
oh, it's too overwhelming. No, set it on auto. That's all you have to do. Press it halfway down to focus it. Press it all the way to take a picture. It's just like a point and shoot. And just say, don't touch anything else. I want you to, give her one lens, the 18 to 55, say, I want you to shoot for 3 months with this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think it's a great thing. I completely understand you don't want her to get, oh, God, this is too, I can't do it.
Right, because oftentimes they look at something and they just say, well, this is just too complicated, and, it's going to sit there.
But she will also if you give her this, she'll be honored. Because even though it's, don't tell her it's $600, but this looks like a pro kit.
Right.
And if she
really likes it and she wants to go further on it, then maybe she gets a nicer,
nicer body, nicer lenses.
Absolutely.
And I think since you're already a Nikon shooter, stick with the Nikons.
Yeah, but you like Canons. I think you use Canons.
Mostly now I'm using Sony because my wife gave me a ridiculously expensive Sony camera. I'll tell you what, though. If I had unlimited funds, it's Leica.
Well, right. Of course.
And I love this Leica Q.
I like that, too.
The Leica Q. It's just, you should get a Leica Q and give her your camera. That's what you should do. Dad, you should treat yourself. I'm not kidding. A D70, that's not so bad. That's nice. Give her a D70.
I just wonder what the software is on the newer cameras and
it's
what
much
the
better.
Menus are.
It's
like.
Infinitely better. Yeah.
Yeah, because this was, maybe 10 years ago.
No, I know. I have one. So I tell you what, I think this D3400, it's their entry level, so it won't be too complicated.
Right.
And they do have this online class she can take if she wants. That comes that comes with the kit.
That's great.
Yeah. It's designed for her.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
You too.
Safe.
You're a good dad, George.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Leo.
Bye-bye.
I'm sorry, Scott. All yours, my friend.
No problemo.
Took up a little of your time, but you still have 411 seconds.
Woo-hoo.
All yours.
Yay. So we've been talking in here in the chat room about high dynamic range, HDR10 versus Dolby Vision. And I agree with CO Bra that the comparison that I did was not apples to apples exactly, because I was looking at a UHD Blu-ray and a streaming source. And he suggests that the best way to test HDR10 versus Dolby Vision is to play the same content in one and then the other. And that's difficult to do, because if a disc, let's say we use a disc as a source, and we send Dolby Vision or HDR10. Well, that's not necessarily under our control, because if you send it to a TV that has Dolby Vision, it will also have HDR10, and you'll see Dolby Vision. If you send it to a TV that only does HDR10, then it will do HDR10, because HDR10 is required on, if you're going to have high dynamic range at all on a disc, on a UHD Blu-ray, it needs to be an HDR10. So Dolby Vision is what's called a dual layer system, which means that HDR10 is what's called the base layer. And then the extension layer is the extra stuff that Dolby Vision does. So if you send a Dolby Vision signal from a UHD Blu-ray to an HDR10 set that doesn't recognize Dolby Vision, it'll automatically be HDR10. So the best way to do apples to apples comparison is to have two TVs, one of which does Dolby Vision, one of which doesn't, only does HDR10. And ideally, they'd be the same. They'd both be LCD TVs or maybe OLEDs, but they have to be the same, and they'd have to be set up the same. They'd have to both be calibrated, made to be as close as possible. Then you send a Dolby Vision Blu-ray, UHD Blu-ray, through a splitter to both TVs. One of them will show Dolby Vision, one of them will show HDR10. And they're both playing the same stuff, so they're all perfectly synced, and you can just scan your eye from one to the other and examine what differences there might be. That's a pretty tricky thing to do. First of all, you need two TVs. You need to spend the time calibrating them. And then you need to spend the time with what few Dolby Vision Blu-ray, UHD Blu-rays there are currently, so which there aren't many. I think there's under 10, maybe 10, something like that. Anyway, so it's a very interesting question, and I agree this was not apples to apples, but it was the best I could do. let's see here. I had a couple other questions. We were talking also about HDMI to component video because somebody has an older TV. They were gifted an older TV that only has component video input. And so can you do HDMI to component conversion? Well, you can. There are such devices. But somebody else in the chat room brought up, and rightly so, there's this copy protection issue, what's called HDCP, high definition copy protection. And when you make that conversion, it may very well not work because of this HDCP. Certainly won't work to send 4K because component video is only high definition, only. it'll only send 1080p or maybe not even that, maybe 1080i. So you're going to get a down resolution from 4K anyway. If you send it an HD source like Blu-ray or broadcast or cable satellite, that should work. And the copy protection of those older formats might not get in the way. I must admit, I haven't done this. I haven't even looked at a component video input in maybe 10 years. So it hasn't been on my radar lately, but since you bring it up and some people still have it, it's what's called a legacy connection. It might be worth checking out a couple of these HDMI to component video converters, which you can find on Amazon and eBay and all sorts of places. I mean, just Google, I think I just did here, HDMI to component. And, you know, they're like 10 to 20 bucks. So it's not very expensive, should be worth trying. I don't see any that Radio Shack makes one. Is Radio Shack even still in business? I know they don't have any stores anymore. It might be worth investigating, checking it out. Let's see. Tim Elliott's asking, what do you think of JG's, I think you mean LG's, lower-end UJ6300 HDR sets. UJ6300, that is an LG LCD TV. And I must admit, I haven't looked at LG LCD TVs lately. I've only really focused on the OLEDs. In the past, I have not been impressed with LG LCD TVs, generally speaking. I think they all use edge lighting. And so another advantage of the Vizio, which I didn't mention, is that it's a full array backlighting with local dimming, which is a better situation than putting the LCDs around the edge. So I don't know that particular set, but I would be a little skeptical just because I have not been impressed with LG LCD TVs. Let's see.
It's time to wrap it up, Mr.
It's
Scott Wilkinson. But
up.
You are the man, and I thank you again. And we'll see you next week, yes?
Yep, you bet. I'll be here.
We missed our last chance to go to the Renaissance Fair up at the Nut Tree.
Oh,
dang,
man.
It. I had my sack butt all ready.
I'd love to see you in those tights, man.
See you, Scott. Thanks
see you
a
later.
Lot. Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Ooh, yeah, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz, anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number, 888-827-5536. As you can see from our last caller last hour, I do like talking photography too. Security, man, that's a big topic. I've been getting a lot of questions about Equifax. Equifax, of course, one of four credit reporting agencies that gathers information from creditors about you every time you get a credit card or buy a house or any variety of economic activities. If you read the fine print, the contract says, and we will report the activity on this account to the credit reporting agencies. Equifax is one. There's Experian, TransUnion. I always forget. There's a new one that I heard about for the first time when this Equifax breach happened. The point is, this is a legal activity. It's kind of a creepy activity, and people who are worried about privacy, you know, often think about Facebook and Google, but forget that there are companies who specialize in collecting every bit of information they can about you. Where you live, where you work, how much you make. Equifax actually keeps a database of your salary history. Yeah, and which is also considered perhaps part of the hacked information that they inadvertently released and never told anybody about for months. 145 million records. The latest Equifax, I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, last hour, the latest Equifax horror is, you know, they have a page where you can dispute a negative report on your credit. That dispute page had a plugin, a third-party plugin on it, that was inducing visitors to download adware, a phony Adobe Flash player that added adware to your system. It was, I mean, they call it adware. I call it malware. That's a virus. Anything that's installed on your system without your knowledge or permission and changes your system's behavior is a virus. They were installing viruses, and then their cop out is, well, oh, well, it wasn't us. It was a third party that we put on our page. It doesn't do it anymore, apparently. But just one more reason not to trust these bozos. Just terrible, terrible security. So the question, though, and I think it's an important question because, first of all, there's no way of knowing Equifax is not being very upfront about whose records were leaked and what records were leaked and what the state of those records were, et cetera, et cetera. They need to be compelled to do so. And I'm sure in time, maybe, perhaps, they'll be compelled to do so. Meanwhile, the safe assumption, 145 million records, that's a lot of adults. That's a high percentage of the total adults in the United States. So the safest thing to assume is that, yes, your records were in there. Again, we don't know. Was it a driver's license? Was it Social Security? Was it credit card numbers? We don't know. They have all that stuff. Was it salary history? They have all that stuff. By the way, their business, just so you know, the business of these companies is to sell your information to anybody who wants it. That's their business. It's funny how people are so worried about Google when there's this sitting right in front of you. These companies that operate legally and openly doing this. Selling your information to anybody who wants it. In any event, I don't think there's anything to do, to be honest. All you can do is the same thing you've been doing all along, I hope, which is be vigilant. Check your credit card bills. Make sure you charged everything that's on that bill. That was you. Those are legit. Immediately notify your credit card company if there are fraudulent charges on there. Same thing with phone bills, all your bills. Just review all those charges every month and make sure that that's all legit. Now, there is another thing that happens sometimes with leaked information that's kind of scary. It's called identity theft. You've probably heard about it. It isn't really as widespread, I think, as people think. It doesn't happen that often, but when it happens, it's devastating to the person it happens to because they use your personal information, your social security number, your date of birth, and so forth, to apply for credit in your name. you may never know that, right? Because you don't get the bill. Nobody gets the bill. They just charge up that credit card and disappear, and it hits your credit report. That's why it's also really important to at least yearly get a credit report from the big three, maybe four credit reporting agencies and see that all the activity on there is legit. That's very important. They all are required by law to give you one free report a year. Also, if you're ever turned down for a credit, they're required to give you a free report so you can see why you were turned down for credit. You can pay for more. I don't like the idea of paying these companies. I don't want to give them any more money than they're already taking. They're basically selling you your personal information now. I don't like that. And there are credit monitoring services. Now, I use one, but I'm a public figure, so I feel like I and my family members are fairly vulnerable. So I do use one. What these monitoring services will do is, to a greater or lesser degree, keep an eye on exactly that kind of activity, people taking credit cards out in your name and so forth. It's unclear how valuable they are. I prefer to err on the side of caution. You may not. They used to be able to do a lot more. They used to do the thing, the very valuable thing, which is put a fraud alert on your credit report. But the credit reporting agencies hated that because it limited their ability to sell your information. So they went to court and they sued and they won, and those companies can't do that anymore. Only you can put a fraud alert on your credit report, or even the more stringent and, frankly, more useful credit freeze. Credit freeze, usually in most states, not all, costs you money to freeze your credit. Then nobody can use your information to get credit, including identity thieves. And then it costs you more money to unfreeze it when you want to apply for a loan or rent an apartment or buy a house or buy a car or get a credit card. And so it's a little inconvenient, and it can be costly, as much as $30 to freeze each time for each credit reporting agency and $30 to unfreeze each time. Some state legislators say you can't charge for that, as is right. And if you're in one of those states that has free credit freezes, it might be something to consider. But it's inconvenient. It slows down the ability to get a credit card. It can bite you in unsurprising ways sometimes. So I think for most people, merely monitoring your credit reports on a regular basis, monitoring all your bills, is probably sufficient. It is. These companies are kind of necessary because we need some way of proving, you know, you need a way of proving that you are credit worthy when you go to a creditor. Say, I want a credit card. I want to take it on a loan. You need a way to say to them, look, see, here's my history. And it can't be you saying, well, see, here's all the bills I've paid off. It has to be a third party. So I understand why they exist, but they really need to be better regulated, highly regulated, because they have a lot of power, not just to ruin your credit, but to make money off of selling your personal information. I don't like that one bit. I think Equifax did waive the fees, at least temporarily, for credit freezes, so it's worth investigating. But there's no point in just doing Equifax. You really need to do all of them. Because if a bad guy has your information and goes to Equifax and can't get a credit card there, they can go to TransUnion or Experian and get it there. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll go back to the phones right after this. Yeah, I don't think they do, but there's no point. You got to freeze it with all the credit agencies, or our podcast today brought to you by LegalZoom. But I could really say, in some ways, Twit's brought to you by LegalZoom, because back in 2005, I asked Kevin Rose. I said, I want to start a company to do podcasts. And after he stopped laughing, I think he even snorted some beer through his nose. He said, well, you got to incorporate and go to LegalZoom.com and get an LLC. Protect yourself because you're sure to be sued any day now. No, I was never sued, but I did make the LLC, and that was the beginning of Twit. I also used LegalZoom to do my trademark, the Twit logo and the Twit name. That's worked out well. LegalZoom is awesome. It was just me. I couldn't afford to go to $450 an hour for an attorney to do that. But all the legal work I needed to do, I could do online with LegalZoom. Since then, we've done our wills with LegalZoom. They send you a great kit, a family planning kit. And if you are doing anything that requires the advice of a lawyer, before you go out and spend all that money on a lawyer, you got to go to LegalZoom. Now, they're not a law firm. This is important. They're not a law firm, but they have already negotiated a network, independent network of attorneys nationwide in every state with fixed rate pricing that is very affordable. So you don't have to worry about an attorney's billable hours piling up as you ask question after question. You're paying a flat fixed fee that's very affordable. No wonder more than 2 million business owners have been navigating the legal system with confidence for more than 10 years. Well, it was 10 years ago, 12 years ago I used them. I think maybe even longer. LegalZoom.com. Take some pressure off yourself. Go to LegalZoom now and take care of your business before the year winds down. And for special savings, use our offer code TECHGUY. In the referral box at checkout, you'll get a little discount, and we will get the credit, and that's important to me. So thank you in advance for doing that. And you'll thank me later. 10 years from now, when you've got your billion-dollar business, you can say, yeah, you know, Leo said LegalZoom. I'm glad I did that. LegalZoom.com. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to know a little something about this technology that's changing our world, both for good and ill. I'm not saying it's all bad. A lot of it's good. George, Aurora, Illinois is next. Hi, George.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I had a quick question about the whole security thing that you were just talking about. I was reading this morning on a blog site that was saying that Apple was going to extend their testing for Apple Pay Cash, and they're now allowing retail employees of their stores to use it. And the problem is some of them have uploaded screenshots that show that when you go to set this thing up, you have to have your name, your address, your social security number, nice. And your date of birth.
Very nice. And that's great.
I'm like, all right, hold on. So one, you want my thumbprint to unlock my phone. Now you want my social security. And then if I upgrade to the iPhone X, you want my face. what else
people? So the big one is social. One way we can really help prevent this kind of stuff is by not giving out your social security number. Everybody and their brother asks for it, including the phone company. Sometimes the reason, for instance, cell companies ask for it is they're going to run a credit report on you, and that's needed by the credit reporting agencies. But,
right.
But in every case, before you give somebody your social, you should think twice about it. Think about if they're going to protect it. And you can say no in many cases. It's amazing how often you're asked for your social security number. The problem is it's hard to change. Now, you can change it, but it's an elaborate process with the government. Government doesn't like to do it because that's how they're keeping track of your Social Security benefits, and it's complicated for them if you have more than one social during your lifetime, your earning lifetime. The problem is that, yeah, you can. It's hard to change your social. It's impossible to change your fingerprint or your face.
Right.
So this is a problem. I agree with you. The issue overall is an issue of authentication. How do you prove you are you?
Well, see, I thought that it would just link to your Apple Pay, that my card.
Yeah, they already have all your information. What do they need more for?
Exactly. So when I read that this morning, I was like, I'm just completely shocked. And the thing is, I really was looking forward to the Apple Pay Cash because I could trade money through iOS to my friends.
Yeah, use Venmo or something else.
Okay, that was my next question, which was, what do you suggest? And You say Venmo.
Well, Venmo's, I'm old school, like two years ago, because Venmo is the old one. I think the new one is called what? Pay.me? What is the new one? There's a new solution that people like a lot. Chatroom has been telling me about it because they're young and hip. What is it?
Well, here's the thing. I just turned 32, and I'm becoming more and more aware of my
cash
reports and stuff like that.
Yeah, you should be, because this is your life.
Right. And when I see, you know, someone ask for my Social Security, I stop and I say, why do you need that?
Yes, good for you. Good man.
Right.
And this is a real issue, and I think a lot of people don't know or don't care. The only reason Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion and Innovis, which is the fourth newest one, get away with this is because nobody cares or is paying attention. That's generally the way it is in this world. Okay, if you don't pay attention, then you get it. Yeah, so Cash.me is the one the young people are using. That's done by Square, and I really like Square. But I don't know what they require to get an account. I doubt it. By the way, it works. They have it works on your phone. They have both iOS and Android app.
Oh, so, excellent. Okay.
Yeah. So they're Square. That's Square, and I think Square is a very good company. They're the ones that invented that little slider, credit card slider you put in your iPhone years ago, and they're still around. There's Venmo, which is a PayPal company. Zelle is used by banks now. I don't know how you pronounce that. Z-E-L-L-E, Zelle.
Yeah, I've actually heard about that one, but my bank isn't covered by it.
Yeah, my bank has started using it, so I've just started paying attention to it. Why is Apple asking for socials? I don't know. That's crazy.
It is.
That's crazy.
Especially with the face ID technology. I'm just like, wow. Next is going to be blood.
The issue, of course, is that for things like money, important transactions, we want to have strong authentication. And we need a way to do this. My fear is if we say, if the federal government says, oh, yeah, we probably shouldn't use Social Security numbers. So maybe what we need is a universal ID number, some sort of national ID. And that's nervousing making as well because, that has other issues.
Right.
So, I don't know if there's a good solution to this. It seems like technology would be a way to do it. My preferred way to do this is kind of how Bitcoin does it. Bitcoin has an anonymous system. You get a unique Bitcoin ID, which is tied to you but isn't tied to your identity. It's your wallet has a long, strong number. A crypto-generated number. It's similar to PGP, which the idea, and I use PGP a lot. I have, so the private key crypto might be the right answer to this. It's still too hard for normal people to use. But for people who are listening who are technically sophisticated, the Open PGP standard uses what we call public key cryptography. And here's how it works. You generate a long, strong pair of keys. There's a public key and a private key. The private key you password protect and you keep secure. You don't put it online if you can help it. You really keep it to yourself because that's the key to the kingdom. The public key you give out, I could tell you my public key on the radio. You give out to everybody. And they can use your public key and your private key to authenticate you. They can say, okay, here's your public key. Certify this with your private key. And you do, and they now know it's you unless your public key is leaked out. But there are all sorts of protections on this. You can have your public key expire. You can have a revocation certificate. So if you're worried about it, you can revoke it and create a new one. There's all sorts of solutions to this. I think public key crypto has solved it. But what hasn't been done is the easy to use front end for normal people. So that's something to look into is OpenPGP. And I publish my public key everywhere. That way, if people wanted to send me a private message, they could. When you get email from me, it'll be signed by my key, my private key. And you can use my public key to verify that in fact, Leo did create this email and it has been unmodified. That's the kind of authentication that banking needs. But
right.
But they still prefer to use fax signatures and things like that. So we can make it better. We could make it better. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to find out why Apple wants your social. You're exactly right to raise this issue. That is not okay.
Well, I appreciate it.
Apparently, Square does ask you for your social as well. Oh, well.
All right.
Yeah, that. So much for that one. Yeah, maybe your bank. Your bank already has your social, right? When you set up a bank account, you have to give it your social, and that's a federal requirement. And that has something to do with money laundering and so forth. But at least if you're doing it with an institution that already has your social, you're not giving it to anybody new. What do they need your social? I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can put a PGP key. You can have a PGP would be the perfect solution. It's better than a fingerprint. It's uncrackable, and I mean because you can generate as long a key as you want. I currently do a 4096 bit key, but which is very, very long. But should at some point that not be sufficient, you know, quantum computing come along, you can do a longer keys and make it harder and harder. So I use a PGP key that's on this. This is a YubiKey. You can store your private key on here and use it to authenticate. So this is like your fingerprint, but it has an advantage over your fingerprint because you can revoke it. It can you should set an expiration date. The bank could say, "All right, we need your key." And you put it in their reader, and they go, "Oh, yeah, that's got to be you because it has your private key on it. We have your public key, which you have, you know, put up on the web, and so we now know it's you." I use a key system called Keybase, which I recommend. This is one attempt to make this easier. I don't store my private key on Keybase. You probably should not. You can, but I don't recommend it. Put your private key anywhere in public. JJ's here, Johnny Jet. I love our travel guru, Johnny Jet. You're back in Manhattan Beach where the weather is fine.
Weather's fine, but I'm a little bit under the weather from, you know, I guess traveling
travel.
Too much.
Travel. Hey, thank you. You and Natalie were so sweet. You offered us your spare room if we had to evacuate here in Northern California. That was very kind of you. I'm very generous.
I think you should come on down.
I'm tempted.
The air
I could do the radio show down there from KFI. Be easy.
Yeah, do it from my studio right here.
Oh, yeah. You've got a beautiful studio. Look at that. So Johnny joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. And I think it's time for all of us to get out of Dodge.
Yes. Well, a couple quick things. Delta just updated their app this week, and they're going to be the first U.S. airline to allow people to – they're going to just check people in automatically. You won't have to go into the app or online and check in for your flight. So as long as you bought the flight and you all you have to do is go into the app and acknowledge that, you know, the FAA restrictions on the banned items, it will automatically check you in.
Now, that means, of course, you're going to have your boarding pass on your phone.
Correct.
How does that – do you do that? I always print a boarding pass. I don't trust this. Yes. And I'm the tech guy.
Yeah. Well, when it first came out, I used my boarding pass on my phone. But there were a couple times where it didn't work. And
yeah.
So
and you're
I had to go downstairs
there,
and get out of line.
Step aside. And you're going, right. No, I had it here. It was here. The worst – I also have an Apple Watch, so you could put it on your Apple Watch.
It's embarrassing.
And sometimes it doesn't fit. Because they never expected a hand to go under there. It's just for a slip of paper. So right. The whole thing is a mess. So I'm Luddite there. I still print out boarding passes. But I guess
a lot of times I do both. I keep a backup
that's a good
print
idea.
Pass in my bag just in case, but not always. But sometimes I do. But, you know, we'll see. I'm going to fly Delta this week, and I'll let you know how it goes.
So get the Delta app. Check in. I get the apps on iPhone that, you know, you have this wallet and you can have all the apps for all the airlines. And I try to do
that. And actually, this is only for iOS. They haven't updated the Android, by the way.
Yeah, what a surprise.
But the reason why I'm mentioning it is because if Delta's rolling it out, I guarantee you the other airlines are going to start. And they're the first U.S. airline to do it.
Oh, you bet.
And another quick thing is that Orbitz came out with some interesting data this week saying that the best time to book your holiday flights is coming up next in the next couple weeks. So they say for Thanksgiving, you want to book on Thursday, October 26th for your Thanksgiving plans. For Christmas, they say the best day is Friday, October 20th. And they say for New Year's is Saturday, November 4th. Now, I don't know if I buy it, but that's their data.
So, okay. So I'm going to New York City in November 29th. I should wait till I add 3 days. What am I? Are they saying I should wait until like the 1st of November? Is there like that's the ideal time?
November 29th is after Thanksgiving.
It's the next week. I'm going the week after. So I should add a week to that date?
No. Listen, I have no idea where they get this. They say it's from last year's. They analyze all their historical data.
Right. But they watch the price go up and down. There's a perfect time, right? Because the price – I bought tickets for Christmas to fly to the Virgin Islands. It was really expensive because we bought them ahead of time. But maybe the price goes down a little bit as you get closer and they don't sell those tickets. And then it goes up again as they get close to the flight date because they're hoping to get the people who have to fly immediately.
That's exactly it. So sometimes you do not want to buy so far in advance unless you're on a low fare carrier or there's a sale going on. I also recommend signing
can you get
up
a
for
refund
fare alerts.
If you buy
on some airlines, Southwest allows it. They don't do the change fee. Unlike United, American, Delta,
charge
they charge $200 at least.
$200
for domestic.
So you'd have to have a big difference in price to make that worthwhile.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's why I love Southwest because they don't charge these fees. You have to pay the difference in the fare.
I know. I'm liking Southwest more and more, but they don't fly everywhere, so
right.
You don't charge for
bags.
Non-seating thing because it seems to load the plane faster if you don't have reserved seats.
Yeah, and they announced this week that Southwest is going to start flying to Hawaii sometime next year or 2019. Yeah. So the fares should go down to Hawaii, which is great news.
All right, give us an app we'll start with the. Fall
the website. I tweeted website. It. I put it in the.
It's a long URL.
It's a long URL, but
it's
at
NewEngland.com.
Yes, and you were, you're from Rhode Island. I was in Connecticut last week, which is southern New England, and the leaves were not. They haven't turned yet, so I was excited to see it because I'm going back soon, and I will be able to see them in peak. And you can see from this map that Connecticut right there. That's still yellow.
Yellow
and Rhode Island's looking good too.
Yeah, you want it to be red.
Red is peak. Red is peak.
The best. Okay. So Maine
there's still time.
Maine is peaking right now.
Parts of Vermont, New Hampshire,
eastern Vermont, western Massachusetts around Springfield.
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting.
And I put another link in the chat room and on Twitter for New York State. So New York State came up with a pretty cool map of all their whole area, which is New York State's a big state, probably close to the size of New England.
Yeah, and it's not. By the way, you can't figure it out just by state. So this is iloveny.com, the I Love New York.
It's not easy. I need to come up with a whole page of all these different ones because the Smoky Mountains has one too.
Oh wow! Well, you kind of know where you're going, but I do love it. I love going and seeing the leaves turn.
It's arguably the best time of the year or the prettiest time of the year. My favorite time is the summer. Yeah. But
brilliant fall color in the Adirondacks, Catskills, Central New York, Finger Lakes, and Chautauqua Allegheny regions. Get on out there. Okay. That's our fall foliage report. We should do that every show. Johnny Jett here with the fall foliage report. Leo, I'm flying high above New York State, and it's red all the way. It'll be fun.
I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to like this one.
All right.
The Faroe Islands. Do you know where they are?
I've heard the name.
Okay, so that's why I'm mentioning it, because this is like a great publicity stunt by these guys, because Google Translate does not have their language in their system, so they came up with their own Google Translate, and they call it Faroe Island translate.
What language do they speak in the Faroe Islands? Celtic?
It's Faroese.
Faroese.
Although your buddy from New Zealand's going to tell me that I'm mispronouncing it.
Is that where it is? It's down in Oceania?
No. It's near England. So it's between
That's what I thought.
The Shetland Islands. And where is it exactly? It's right off the coast of England.
So it looks just like Google Translate, but they put a Band-Aid over it saying Faroe Islands Translate. That's hysterical.
But you can type in something right now, and someone live will translate it.
Oh, it's not my computer.
That's what's crazy about it. So I don't know how quick they'll be, but it should be
I'm typing, hi, I'm from the United States. I love your region. Let's see how long it takes. Oh, look.
That can't be live.
No, that's just an ad. That can't be.
Okay. I was like, but supposedly they do it lickety split.
Do they have do they have a nice Irish accent when they talk in the Faroe Islands? I don't know.
I don't think it's Irish.
Doubt it. It's something.
Yeah.
It's Faroese.
Yes. But these guys came up because Google also.
We'll talk. You know, I'm getting the Pixel Buds in a couple of weeks, and we will talk when I get that. It's about a month, because I would love to see how that works.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, you'll find Johnny and all his good stuff at johnnyjet.com. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter, too. He's at JohnnyJet everywhere. And each week right here, thanks for joining us, Johnny. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Neato. They're still translating.
Are they?
Well, they got to wake a Faroesian up. Hey, Faroesian, wake up. Wake up.
They're partying. It's Saturday evening. It's
Saturday night. That's the problem. That's the problem.
It's in the North Atlantic. So there's 18 islands there, and it's between, it's near the Shetlands and Iceland and Norway. I don't know why I said the UK. People are going to rag on me.
Well, who knows where the hell that is? It's in the North Sea, it sounds like. You know, this is funny. Finding a random Faroese, what do they text it to them?
Supposedly they're some on standby. They're all volunteers. They have a hairdresser doing it.
This is a brilliant publicity stunt.
It really is. It's,
wow.
But it looks like a beautiful, beautiful part of the world.
I love it.
It's cold as can be.
Well, I wouldn't want to go there in the winter. It's probably cold in the summer. Oh, fumbling with camera, it says. Wait a minute! This is hysterical. I got to get my sound on here so we can hear this if it happens. Make sure I got my sound settings right. Yeah. Awesome. Oh yeah, we're hearing the ocean, the Faroese ocean, fumbling with camera. So they're going to record an answer. I'm saying hi. I'm from the United States. I love your region.
Here we go. Loading the video.
This is hysterical.
Hei, jeg fra USA. Jeg elsker dere landspart.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my God, that's awesome. She's even cute. Wow. I got a response from a cute Faroesian. That's hysterical.
Yes. Some of these tourism boards come up with incredible
publicity. That is inspired. And that poor woman has to stay home Saturday night just for somebody like me. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. Just call me Run Around Leo. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. So I went, this is brilliant marketing. The Faroe Islands, which only has about 50,000 people. It's a territory of Denmark up there in the North Sea. But they want tourism. It's a beautiful area. So they created, as Johnny mentioned, because the Faroe language, the Faroese language is not translated by Google Translate. So they created a Faroe Islands Translate. It's Faroe, F-A-R-O-E, Islands, translate.com. And it works. But apparently they do it with a human, and they actually get a camera and everything. So it took a couple of minutes. I typed in English. Hi, I'm from the United States. I love your region. Okay, it's a little, namby-pamby. But then an actual Faroe Islander in real time translated it because she sent me the video. Let me play it for you.
Hey, jeg fra USA. Jeg elsker dere landspart.
Wow. That's fantastic. She's up late on a Saturday night in the Faroe Islands. And that's wild. That's wild. I'm sure they're going to get a lot of attention for that. That's brilliant. I'm going to send it to me so I have a copy of that so I can play it on cold winter nights. 88. One more time. I just want to hear it one more time.
Hey.
USA, I guess, is USA. Wow. Back to technology. Is there anything it can't do? Back to the phones from Farmington, Minnesota. I'm probably saying that wrong. Ivan, is it Farmington or Farmington?
Farmington.
I think there's a missing R there. What can I do for you, Ivan?
So I just have a quick question for you. At the top of the show, I heard you talk about if you want to leave a comment on your site, logging in with your Facebook account or your Google account. And I see that on other websites as well. And I'm just wondering, when you do that, are you giving those websites any information?
Yeah, you sure are. So here's what's going on with that. They call it single sign-on. And it's actually a great idea. Instead of having to have a different account for every site, I don't want you or need you to create an account for techguylabs.com. But at the same time, I don't want people wandering in and putting spam comments up there. So it's just a little speed bump. They could still do it, but it's just a little speed bump. And what they do is, instead of having you create an account at techguylabs.com, I say you can use your existing account. And many services, Twitter offers this, Facebook offers this, Google offers it. Many, I think Microsoft has it as well. Many companies offer this as a convenience. If you push that button, Google, for instance, checks to see if you have a Google account. Now, probably you've already logged into Google on that browser. And if you have recently, there'll be a cookie, a little bit of information, a long digit stored on your hard drive, that is your Google cookie. And it's identified by, you know, a name that says it's Google.com. So pressing that button sends that cookie to Google, which verifies it and says, yeah, that's Ivan. And that's all we need. Our site will get that information. We will get your Gmail address. I think that's what they sent us. We don't use it. We discard it. But that's the transaction that goes on. Google will, if it wished to, and I imagine it does, could record the site that you're using. They could record the time of day. There's information you can ask the browser for, what the name of the browser, the version number of the browser, weird things like the resolution, the size of the window. There's a bunch of information the browser will give up, and Google could ask for that from the browser without any intervention on your part and record it. In some cases, and the security community is divided on this, it's conceivable that the browser might have other information about you, like if you recorded in your browser your address, as many do, for autofill, credit card numbers for autofill, it's conceivable that the browser might send them that as well. But it's my understanding that there are security measures in place to keep that from happening. So it is a little leak of your information. It's letting Google know you're on that site.
Right. Okay. So, but you're not actually giving them, when you log in with your password, you're not giving them your password.
Absolutely not. No. There's a really good system called OAuth and OAuth 2 that Google and other sites use. You've probably seen this. When a site, if you hadn't logged into Google recently, it would pop up a window with the Google logo on it and asking you to log into your Google account. Same thing with Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft. They would, if they didn't have that cookie on there, they would have you log in. That's not my site. That's a pop-up on top of my site that Google manages. And then Google sends a token back to me saying, yep, that's Ivan. That's using a system called OAuth. That's actually a very secure, well, mostly, there have been flaws, but they patched them quickly. The mostly secure system. That's a good way of doing this. The whole benevolent point of this is to make it so you don't have to create accounts everywhere you go. But admittedly, one of the incentives for Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Microsoft to do this is that they get more information about you. And since they already know all about you, Ivan, right? It's just one more bit of information. Oh, he's interested in the Tech Guy Labs.
Right.
But that's useful to them. They may, from that, infer that you are interested in technology stuff. You might get more technology ads on Google, something like that.
Okay, awesome.
All right.
That was it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You can, if you want to avoid this, procedure, you can use an incognito window. Actually, you can verify this procedure. Use an incognito window. Press one of those buttons. You will be forced to log in. And at that point, you know, you're identifying yourself. I guess if you were nervous or wanted to be extra prudent, you could create a dummy account with Google that you never used except for this purpose. You know, the problem is the internet and the web are essentially designed to be open systems for people who are willing to say who they are, to identify themselves and provide information. And I guess my thought is if you really don't want to share information about yourself, you either don't use the internet, because really that's the nature of the internet. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's the way the internet's designed. Or you'll have to take steps to travel anonymously on the internet. Things like, as we were talking about, this tiny hardware firewall, routers, VPNs, Tor. And these technologies slow down your access and complicate it a lot. Most people don't use it. And you might even say they kind of break the internet, because the internet is based upon this kind of trade of your personal information for free use of services like Google. You don't pay for that Google login or the Facebook login, the Microsoft login. You pay, in effect, with your information. And so if you don't do that, you might be saying you're kind of violating the agreement, the social agreement. Oh, I'm going to give you information in return for this service. And that's why I say all the time, and we say in our privacy policy, we don't collect this information. We don't want this information. Third parties might. Google might. We can't stop them from that if you use the Google login. But that's your choice. But we do not. I have no interest in that, mostly because I know a lot of you would be offended by it. So we just don't. We monetize elsewhere in other ways by selling ads. We'll take a break for news at the top of the hour, see what's going on in the world around us, and then we'll be back to talk more geek stuff. Geeking out with the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this, just to repeat what's going to, I was demonstrating this. This is a YubiKey, YUBICO.com, YubiKey.com. The YubiKeys, this is a YubiKey 4. They're smart little devices. When you plug them into a USB port, see, that's a USB port, and it's on my keychain. When you plug it in, it identifies as a keyboard, which is clever, and it provides power. There's a CPU in here and some memory and some software that can generate a one-time password. So, or it can store my PGP key, and I can have it verify my PGP key as well. In either case, you press this button, so it'll power up from the USB, and you press this button. So watch, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around the other side. This is my LastPass login. Trust this computer, yes, yes. This is Freebird Chrome I'm logging into. I always label these logins so I know where this came from. And this isn't going to give out any information, because I'm going to put the cursor there. Now, when I put the YubiKey in, it will actually type, you'll see, a very long one-time key that will match up to what LastPass expects, and then it'll give me access. Let me go over here and do that. I'm over here now, putting this into the USB port. And once it lights up, I can press the button, and it will type in a very long password. So that authenticated with LastPass, and it's actually, LastPass is so important because all my, you know, I got to keep, that's the one account that I have to secure more than any other, because everything's in that account. So if the beauty of this is, it's not a text message or authenticator message. If you don't know my password and have this key, you can't get into my LastPass account. Now, it doesn't work on a phone. They make a YubiKey Neo, which has a NFC chip in it. So it will work in that case. But most of these companies like LastPass, don't require this kind of authentication on the phone because they know that you can't really use a YubiKey on it. So they're smart enough. I've attached YubiKey to my Facebook. Anybody that lets me, Facebook does, LastPass does. And worst case, you know, you can see if you opened up Notepad, put this in and pressed it, you would see the long thing it typed, and you could type it in by hand if you had to. But it's pretty long. It's like 30 characters. Can't remember how many it is, but it's quite a few. All right, so now I did that. So now I have my Keybase login. And all of that rigmarole I had to go through, I have to go through every 30 days, but I had to go through it this time because I changed my recovery email to something super secret. So I was using my main address, my main email address in my recovery. And after that hack at Hover, I realized that's probably a bad idea. So I'm now using a special email account that no one knows about with an email address that's not decipherable as my recovery address for all of my services. That way, the Hover attack was the guy tried to forward my – it didn't work, but he tried to forward my Leo at Leoville email to him. And then he went to Twitter and said, send me a recovery password. Fortunately, because I used two-factor on Twitter, he got my password but didn't help him because he needed the second factor and he couldn't do that. Another reason he used two-factor. So this is – I wanted to log into Keybase to show you on my Keybase account. This is my Keybase – this is my PGP key. So you can – this is my public – see, it says public key. So this is a long public key. It's very long, 4,096 bits. Hard to guess, right? I give that out. In fact, if you get an email from me, you'll get this link to my public key. And you can use that to verify that it did come from me. Because only I can generate a key with my private key that is verified by the public key. So that's how PGP works. You give out your public key. So I love this YubiKey. YubiKey will also store. In fact, this is my next plan. It's time for me to revoke my PGP key, create a new one, and then use the YubiKey. And then I'm nervous about it, but is not right now. I store my private key in a variety of places, not here. But what I'd like to do is store it only on the YubiKey, and maybe have a USB drive that I keep in my drawer. Or a safe or somewhere that has my private key. Because that's the most – you don't want to have that private key escape. Then anybody could be you. So – but if I put on the YubiKey, I think that would be a good thing. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, translations from Faroe Islanders. They sent me – they sent me a very nice personal translation. I guess they realized I was talking about them on the radio.
Hey, hette Leo Laporte, teknofrøymaverden.
I now know how to say the tech guy in Faroese, I think.
Hey, hette Leo Laporte, teknofrøymaverden.
Teknofrøymaverden. That's me. Again, that's using the internet to market smart. Now, I have a feeling we probably have broken the site completely by sending 500,000 people over there. But, hey, they wanted the publicity. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Aaron in Massachusetts, where the leaves are turning. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I am absolutely ecstatic that I actually get to talk to you. I've been building on this conversation for the past 2 months.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, and I hope you haven't been holding for 2 months.
No. Very shortly. So I have a bit of a story going into my problem.
Okay.
A couple of months ago when this phone call started, you had said that you can't get to the control panel any longer. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, you can. It's right here. And realizing that nobody remembers to right-click anymore because everything is touchscreen.
Ah, you can
right-click.
What do you right-click on?
You right-click on the start menu.
Oh, of course you do. And actually, that pro menu I bring up all the time, I like it. You can also get there by doing Windows key X.
And, right.
Yeah, I love that menu. That's for advanced users, but it works quite well. I think it's a good solution.
Right, and there was in my system. I'm on the Windows 2000 or the Windows 10.
Right,
and I'm right clicking on the start menu, and I'm seeing okay, there's my control panel, and I go in the control panel, and everything's there, and happy hunky dory.
Yeah, it actually says settings, not control panel, right?
No. My system still says control panel.
Oh, interesting, because mine just says settings.
Right. That's
Oh, yeah, because my system, and what I was bemoaning is not the modern style control panel with the big pictures and all that, the Windows settings screen, but the old-fashioned Windows, you know, XP control panel that had all those special super-duper things in there.
Right. Well, and that's part of my problem.
Do you see that on yours?
Update on my personal computer.
Maybe you inherited those settings from previous versions.
It could be because it was a conversion from the Windows 8.
Yeah. What version of Windows 10 are you using now?
On my system, it's downstairs. I'm not exactly sure, but I know on my partner's system, part of the thing with the updates is it wasn't updating. So we disabled, because I was thinking back through all of the numerous shows that I've listened to. I go back to the dial-up days. Jeez. I was actually listening on AM radio.
Wow. That's great.
We disabled the antivirus. He has McAfee.
Good.
And that prompted going, oh, okay, I'm alive. I'm going to go through numerous updates and restarts and updates.
Oh, my God. McAfee was blocking updates.
Right, because of the antivirus that would, because you had said in previous episodes that the antivirus will a lot of times freeze up, lock up the updating process.
But that is antithetical to keeping your system secure. It's the exact opposite of keeping it secure. It's keeping it insecure.
Absolutely. You think they'd fix things like this.
Well, this is why, and you should tell your partner this, don't run antivirus software, especially Mac.
Yeah. Just stick with what Windows has.
You've learned that from many years of listening. You know, for years we recommended antiviruses, going back to Windows 7 and earlier. ESET was a sponsor on this show. WebRoot has been a sponsor more recently. But with the advent of Windows 10, they have an antivirus built into Windows now. And unfortunately, what we've seen over and over again is these antiviruses, like in this example, make your system less secure, not more secure.
And it makes you wonder.
Makes you wonder. So they're telling me in the chat room that you can change what you see in that right click on the start button menu. You can actually change the menu items in there.
Interesting.
And that's probably why you're seeing control panel as well as other stuff. So
I don't know if mine's been keeping up with updates as well.
Yeah. Well, that's something you ought to do.
But I know with the recent round of updates that his, when I right-click, says the settings that you said it says.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
But that goes into my problem that when we did do the updates, now the system will literally go to sleep after 1 minute of inactivity.
Okay.
So I went into my system.
You go into the power settings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where we can still get to the old control panel from there.
So in the new control panel, where you go to power and sleep, that's the initial place I would suggest going, because that's going to say when it goes to sleep. And it says on mine, on battery power, turn off after 5 minutes, but it can be as short as 1 minute or as long as never. So that's where you want to probably at least initially look in the Windows settings under power and sleep for Windows 10.
Right. And that's where I've gone.
And it still says, what does it say there?
On screen, when plugged in, turn off the screen after 2 hours.
And it's not 1 minute, but it's turning off after 1 minute.
It's going to sleep and on the sleep option. Either when it's plugged in, go to sleep after 2 hours.
Interesting.
And, you know, so both the screen and the sleep function are set for 2 hours, but after 1 minute, it'll go. And that's where I had found if you go over to additional power settings.
Yes.
That's where you can still access the original, because right at the very tippy top of that menu, you can control panel home.
Yeah.
And that'll bring up your traditional.
The old-fashioned power options control panel. That's the
right.
The thing that bugs me most about what Microsoft did, starting with Windows 8 and then subsequently in Windows 10, is this duality. They do it in many ways. There are often Windows Store versions of apps, let's say Skype, as well as desktop versions of apps. And the worst one is the control panel. There is the traditional control panel buried in there. It's still all there, but you don't get to it directly when you open, you know, your menu. You get Windows settings. And the duality, I think, confuses people. This is a perfect example. You go to Windows settings. It says turn off after 5 minutes or 2 hours in your case. It's not doing what it's doing. But you said when you click advanced or, I'm sorry, additional power settings, you're able to get into the old-fashioned control panel. And then how did you fix that?
Well, how did I fix which?
Change. Did you click the button that says change when the computer sleeps?
Actually, that's part of the whole updates because it's starting to get into the actual control panels themselves, because when I change when the computer sleeps, it comes up and says I can't change the plan settings. And
interesting.
The traditional. So they're slowly chewing away at the actual control panel.
No, you can change it on a normal system. This is an example of where you probably, at least on your system, would benefit by burning it all down and installing Windows 10 clean.
Just doing now.
Just get, you know, the way to do that, the easiest way to do that is to go to Microsoft.com, Google Windows Media Creation Tool, and you can create a Windows 10 boot USB. And it'll be a pure Windows 10, whatever version you have, home or pro. And then boot to it, wipe the drive, and install that clean. And I think you're going to, that should fix all of these issues. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Furthermore, and thanks to the chat room, Aaron, here's an article on how to access the traditional control panel lost in the Windows 10 Creators Update, and I'll put that in our show notes. You can go in there and it's a non-trivial fix, but you can actually change what is available. I guess it's in a folder. That's crazy, man. That's just Windows. They're nuts.
Yeah, they just keep eating it, you know.
I think your description's really good. It is. It's like Ouroboros. It's a snake eating its own tail. They're slowly whittling away. But the problem is then they don't give anybody a way to fix it, to change it. You know, they just kind of take away capabilities.
Do you think to solve my timeout issue?
I think I'm pretty sure, in fact. So here's what my guess has happened. When you install Windows, the installer looks at your hardware and figures out what your ACPI settings, what capabilities you have for ACPI, and makes a decision. And literally, there are a variety of kernels it can install at that point. If it makes a decision that, you can't do that, it's going to install a kernel that can't do that. And the only way to fix it is to reinstall Windows. So that may be one of the issues, is it just it when it first installed back in Windows 8 days, it made a decision about hardware capabilities that was wrong. The upgrade can't change it. So often with power, especially with power issues, a clean install of the latest version of Windows fixes those issues.
Okay.
Now, you don't have to worry about a license because you are already licensed on that machine. As soon as you installed Windows 10, it gave you an activation and then it gave you an entitlement. So in their activation, their authorization server has your machine's information in there and it'll say, he's cool. He owns it.
Okay. And would I want to do that from a different system?
No, it doesn't matter. You can make that media creation tool from your system.
On that system that's going to be rebooted?
Yep, doesn't matter. It's just going to download an ISO and put it on a USB key.
Okay, I just didn't know if there were any virus, because I have...
No, it's not a virus. That. Well, yeah, no, it would have to be a pretty sophisticated virus to modify that ISO on the fly. So I think you're all right.
Okay. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you today.
It's great. I'm so glad you've listened all this time. Thank you, Aaron. I really appreciate
it. You're very
welcome. Where in Massachusetts?
We're in Charlton.
Oh, beautiful.
On the southern border right out by Sturbridge.
Oh, I used to go to Sturbridge Village as a kid all the time.
Yeah, we go there every Christmas to do the trains.
Oh, that would be so much. Oh, God, that would be so much fun.
It is for the kids.
And they have the best coconut molasses chew cookies they make fresh there. I'll never forget that.
Every year.
You got to drink a quart of milk with each one. Yeah, it's amazing. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Aaron. Take care.
Likewise. You too.
Have a great fall. All right. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Back to the phones we go as we continue to help save the world one computer at a time. Craig in Frederick, Maryland. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Leo. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I definitely need to be in your audience someday. I'm going to get out.
Come visit us. I noticed, though, that after the fires, the visitors to our studio dropped precipitously. there hasn't been anybody here in a week, but we're open, and we'll be. I'm sure we'll get more people.
Awesome. Maybe you can help me with a decision here, and I think you're in the same position that I am. So I fly for business every week, and I fly on Southwest a lot, and I get free Wi-Fi because I fly so much.
Nice.
And I currently have a high end HP Spectre X 360 2-in-1, which is a great laptop. I love it. It's the one with a 4K and 15-inch display.
Nice.
And I love using the tablet.
Yep.
But using a 15-inch laptop on an airplane.
Like you just better hope the person in front of you doesn't lean back.
And that's my problem. So
I've sat there with a laptop open, and the person, you know how people do it. They don't slowly go back. They go, whoom. And caught the top of my screen. It practically broke it. It practically bent it in half. I was fortunately quick enough to go, ah, and pull it out. But that's deadly. I'm sure that's happened. So, yeah.
It's an expensive laptop. So, anyway, I'm one of the people getting the Pixel 2 XL this week.
Nice. You're getting it this week?
I'm scheduled from the 18th to the 20th. So mine's jealous. Coming this week.
Mine comes in a month. I'm so jealous.
Sorry.
I didn't order it fast enough, apparently.
And so I also did what you did. I ordered the Pixelbook, the $1,000 version, though, because
I changed my order to that one because I realized there's no point in getting the more expensive one.
Oh, okay.
So you did the right thing.
Okay, so I've grown up with computers since the 80s, but I'm really intrigued by Chromebooks, and I already have a good laptop to edit videos when I get to a hotel,
good.
That sort of thing.
You're going to love this Pixelbook for travel.
So you really think I'm going to like this, because I'm also seeing live videos. I don't want to confuse your listeners, but I see things that you can actually put Mac OS on it.
No. That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
Okay.
You can with great effort. You can a little more easily put a little Linux cheroot in there, in either case, the first thing you have to do is disable the boot security on that laptop.
Oh, no, no.
One of the reasons you buy a Chromebook is because of its security. So let's leave it as is. And guess what? I think you're going to be extremely happy. First of all, solves the airplane problem because it's a 2-in-1. So any of these new 2-in-1s that can fold over, if you want to watch a movie, you put it in tent mode. Nobody's seat reclining will affect that at all. You could still type. I'd be careful of using it in a standard laptop mode. You would have that issue of the seat back. But it's only 12. It's smaller. It's 12 inches, not 15.
Yeah, smaller.
Yeah.
And you know, so for the $1,000, I've heard you comment about the price. I've seen your other shows
where
people are concerned about it. But that does have a lot of power to it and the memory. When you start looking at Windows laptops that have similar they're getting close to that price.
Yeah.
So,
but the, what, mean, the thing that a civilian says, somebody not washed in the propaganda of Silicon Valley might say is, well, wait a minute. You're telling me that on a Chromebook, all I can do is run Chrome, and I can actually run the Android store. So that's changed the picture a little bit. But I can only, I can only run Chrome, or for a couple of $100 less, I could get a similarly configured Windows machine, run Chrome in Windows, and have all of Windows. And the answer is yes, I am telling you that. And the reason people would want a Pixelbook is for that security and simplicity. If you if you spend your life in your browser, and most people do with email, browsing, all the stuff they do, they very rarely go out of the browser except maybe to play solitaire. You can do all of that on a Pixelbook. And when you add the Android store, now you have a significant number of applications with greater capabilities. For instance, a number of people have already pointed out a Pixelbook running the Microsoft Office Android apps is going to be a very capable machine that can do Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel. And so that's kind of interesting. Yeah, I think you're going to be, I bet you'll end up using that more than you use your PC, except for video editing and things like that.
But I already have a laptop for that, as I told you. So, and all my corporate work is web-based now anyway. So
that's true of everybody.
Your thought on that.
Everything is. And I'll tell you why I bought a Pixelbook, besides the fact that I have to review it. I like having a high-end laptop. I don't want a kind of a cheap plasticky laptop. And admittedly, you can get a very good Chromebook for $500. The Samsung Chromebook Plus is excellent.
Yeah.
But it's plasticky. It feels a little cheesy. I'm willing to pay more to get better components. How long am I going to have that? 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
That cost is worth it for me. So that's more of – it's like buying a little bit of a luxury for yourself. And not everybody can or even necessarily should do it. But if you can afford it and you like to have a nice feeling machine that's rugged and well-built, I think $1,000 isn't the end of the conversation. Now, I understand, you know – people who just, you know, walking by are going to say, that's crazy talk. But you and I know better.
And right? I trust your insight. That's why I'm asking you. And I feel excited, but it's $1,000 for a Chromebook. And
No. You're going to. In fact, it's interesting because Google, for the first time that I can think of, called it a laptop.
Right.
And I really think that given the strength of the Android store, it's a great screen using a Wacom digitizer. And if you buy the Wacom pen to go with it, that, you know, the 2-in-1. Look, I have a 3000. My main machine is a $3,000 Lenovo Yoga, second generation Carbon Yoga, X1 Yoga. Very nice laptop, $3,000. And if I need, you know, Windows apps that I can't run on a Pixelbook, sure, I'll use it. But I think that this is going to be very close to that in quality. And if you think of it that way, it's only a third the cost.
Right. Well, I'm excited getting that phone this weekend and having that Pixel.
Will you call if you can get through? I'd love to get a review of the Pixel 2.
Absolutely, because I have a Pixel now, and I'm getting that $400 credit, which made it a no-brainer.
I know.
It's the best phone I've ever had. I love it.
You got the XL, the Pixel 2 XL?
Yes, I'm going from XL to the 2. Yeah. So it's the best phone I've ever owned.
I'll be very interested in what you think of it. I wish I could get mine sooner, but I guess for whatever reason, I was slow off the trigger. I ordered it during the event. I don't know how you could order it much sooner, but mine's not coming until next month.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Your time.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Yeah. We live in expensive times. That's the truth of it. But if you think about the value you get from your technology, this is what you really have to think about. If you don't get a lot of value, if you just use it from time to time to play card games and send an email, then that it's crazy. That doesn't make sense. But if you use it all the time, if it's your work tool, if it's if it's an important part of your life, you think about the price you're paying. It may not seem so expensive, and it is worth having a better screen, better keyboard, better trackpad. Those things you use all the time, day in, day out. But only you can make that decision. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, maybe it's because I didn't order the black. I ordered the white. White 256. If you, like me, spend all day looking at a screen, you know that feeling. You know, your eyes are dry and you rub them and it just, you know, and your head starts to hurt. Our eyes were never designed to do what we do all day long. We stare at a screen, and I've got a solution for you. Felix Gray. These are Felix Gray glasses designed for computer users. First of all, they're beautiful. They really look great. This is not going to look good on me because I have a very wide head, but I think these are Lisa's, actually. That looks so cute on her when she wears it. It doesn't do any magnification. Well, it does actually, if you can see, it does a slight magnification. But most importantly, it's got blue light filtering technology. And by the way, Felix Gray embeds it into the lens. This is a lot of companies, you'll get blue, you know, so-called blue blockers. They actually glue a filter onto the top of the lens. It's unsightly. That's why they look so weird. These do not look weird. In fact, let me put them on so you can see. It doesn't make me look yellow or blue or anything. Just handsome. Hey, baby. I'm wearing my Felix Grays. So they block the blue light coming out of your screen, which really helps with the headache. There's no color distortion. They're handcrafted from premium Italian materials. It's the same stuff Versace uses. Seriously. And so they look great. And if you go to felixgrayglasses.com/tech guy, you can see all the models they've got. Let me show you how they come. They're beautiful. Felix Gray computer glasses. They come in both. Oh, they now have reading lenses, too. So they come in non-prescription or readers. And they are going to have prescription lenses soon, I might add. They come in beautiful boxes. Reading prescriptions range from +1 to +2.5. So I'm +1.5, so I'd probably get the readers. What I would suggest, though, and this is kind of, you don't have to do this, but what I would suggest is, even if you don't, you know, you're not over 40 and you don't need readers, you might want to look at getting a little bit of magnification, about 0.25 magnification. I think that's what's in here, yeah. Slight magnification. It hardly changes anything, but it really helps. If you're like a programmer or a, you know, financial analyst, you got those 18 screens in front of you, it makes a huge difference. Oh, these are mine. These fit me better. I like these. Orders include free shipping and, of course, free returns. You got nothing to lose. Give your eyes, I'll tell you what, just one, spend one day wearing your Felix Grays in front of the screen. And as soon as I put it on, I feel better. And I'm wearing contacts, but the Felix Grays really help. FelixGrayGlasses.com/tech guy. Try out a pair of Felix Gray computer glasses and relax. Feel better. I like this. Oh, it's so nice. FelixGrayGlasses.com/tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Dick DiBartolo coming up in a minute. He's our giz whiz. Always joins us with some sort of crazy crackpot. I'm sorry. Unusual gadget. But let's continue on with the calls. Dr. Bird is on the line from Laguna Niguel. Hi, why do they call you Dr. Bird?
Well, you've called me Dr. Bird before, too, because remember, you saw my Flickr website.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Yes, I remember Dr. Bird.
Exactly.
Good to see you again.
I'll tell you, you need to come down here, down to sunny Southern California, smoke-free Southern California. And come down and do some photography down here.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's not much photography when there's a lot of smoke and haze in the air.
Exactly. Just,
nothing looks good.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my point.
And I wonder how the birds are doing. I mean, aren't they very sensitive to...
I'll tell you, Leo, we had, you know, on Monday, we had a very bad fire. We had what was called a Corona 2 fire.
Yeah.
And that devastated one of my favorite places to go counting birds.
I'm sorry.
Peters Canyon Regional Park. Basically, it went up in flames.
Isn't that tragic?
It really is tragic. And also part of Santiago Oaks went up and part of Irvine Park as well. And it was really, really...
Well, we just can't forget. Nature has the upper hand.
I know. Well, that fire, unfortunately, was started by Cal Fire, by a fire they never put out.
What?
That's right.
Nice.
That fire was started because of a fire that was never fully extinguished.
Oops. Oopsie.
Yeah, you got that right. Anyways, I called you because I heard that man talking about the, I guess his name was Harry, calling from Hollywood.
Yeah.
Wanting to get his daughter.
Yeah.
I can tell you, a good friend of mine works at Sammy's Camera.
Now, you're a professional or an avid enthusiast?
Oh, I'm a professional. Okay. I make half my living off of selling bird photos.
So now, you know, listen to what Dr. Bird has to say.
Well, you could.
Although, I have to say, wildlife photography and bird photography in particular is a very specialized, very challenging kind of photography because your subjects don't sit still.
Yeah, you could say that.
And you can't get too close. They're distant.
That's why when you're doing birds, you can never have too big of a lens.
Yep, but then you also want stabilization. You need fast autofocus. You need there's a lot. It's tough. It's tough. So that's a very it's like sports photography in some regards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
When it comes to the photography equipment.
So I recommended the Nikon D3200 kit because it was an affordable $600 kit. APS-C sensor, which I think is a very good sensor for somebody starting in photography. She was only 17. What would you suggest instead, or where did I go wrong?
Well, number one, when you look at the back of a Nikon camera, you look at the back of a Canon camera, that is head and shoulders explanation point one being right there. The ease of use of a Canon camera is so superior compared to the ease of use of a Nikon camera.
Now, you're a Canon shooter, obviously. Well, I don't think you're shooting Nikon, which is funny because a lot of bird photographers use Nikon, at least until recently, because it had such fast focus, so much better continuous autofocus compared to Canons. But you've always used Canon?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, when I first started photographing birds in 1992, I used Minolta equipment.
Oh, yeah, very nice. Very nice.
The problem with the Minolta equipment is the continuous focusing never stopped.
Yeah.
I'd be photographing a great blue heron sitting still. The camera would never stop focusing.
It's pulsing. That's not good, of course. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Anyways, just to make my point
So you think Canon would be simpler for her?
Absolutely.
What is a good? Would you start with a Rebel, an EOS Rebel?
Yeah, I would probably send Harry into Costco and have him get the deal that they have on the T6i Rebel.
That's
you
the latest.
You get two lenses with it, yep. And it's a great starter kit.
All right, and what's the price on that?
I do not know what the price is because I'm not shopping that kind of equipment.
Yeah, I'm looking at the T6 on list price with an 1855 kit for $450. So it's going to be comparable. It's their same. It's basically their entry level.
Right.
Well, and the only reason I said Nikon because I like Canon too. The only reason I said Nikon is because he had Nikon.
Well, here, Leon, let me just make a point real fast because I know you have other callers you got to get to. The T6i. Is probably the best bang for the buck that Canon has ever made.
Ah.
And it's very easy to use.
What makes it such a good deal?
Well, because the I-Series camera is better than the non-I-Series camera.
Oh, okay.
See, Canon has the T6, they have the T6i, then the latest is the T7i.
Ah.
The T7i is almost getting into the realm of the beginnings of the 7D. Advanced. Yeah. Leo.
You can't go wrong with Canon. I'll agree with you 100%. They're really good.
Well, just to let you know, one thing I want to tell you.
T6i is a little more expensive than I quoted. It starts with the 1855 kit at $750.
Yeah.
A little more expensive.
Right.
But he didn't sound like he was worried about price. He wanted simplicity.
Well, the T6i is the simplest camera you could put her into getting.
Very good. Very good.
Oh, one travel tip. That Johnny Jet has ever mentioned.
Yes.
Okay. Every time I go traveling, and I fly Southwest Airlines, and I do a lot of traveling. I go to New Mexico. I go to Texas. I go to Arizona. I always put Neosporin in my nostrils. and I also carry Huggies wipes with me. I carry that in my vest.
Johnny has mentioned wipes. In fact, I mocked him once. Because he wipes everything down on the plane, including, most importantly, the luggage compartment above your head. He says, that's the best way. And I said, you're silly. And he didn't do it that one time, and he got sick. So
the seatbelts is number one.
Seatbelts, luggage compartment, armrests. You just hose them down.
Absolutely.
Good tip. But I don't know about the Neosporin. I guess that keeps your nose from drying out.
That keeps colds from entering your nostrils.
They can't go in, huh? The Neosporin stops
it. What it does, I mean...
You look a little weird.
Filter. Well, let's put it this way. I can't remember the last time I got sick when I got back home from flying.
I'm going to try that because about a third of the time I'll get a cold. In fact, I did the last time.
Right.
All right.
And the thing is with the amount of traveling you're doing, you go to Europe quite a bit.
Yeah.
And you're on long flights.
Yep.
You're on a flight for 8 hours.
That's right.
At a time. And I don't know about you, Leo, but whenever I travel internationally, I always get up and I walk around the plane.
Yep. So you're really exposing yourself. Plus, you're getting foreign germs you don't have any antibodies for.
Oh, boy.
Those colds in France, it's a different animal.
Oh, my God. There are lots of diseases in France.
Oh, no, come on. Hey, it's really nice to talk to you, Dr. Bird. I completely agree with your recommendation. I haven't used, frankly, the low-end either Canon or Nikon in years. So I'm glad to get that input, that the Canons are an easier system to use. And that's what he was looking for. Thank you. I hope he's still listening.
I definitely am, Leo. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care. Stay safe out there. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Actually, I think I might be done for calls. I only have a minute left. I'll see if we can get one more in here. Tristan in Ohio. Hi, Tristan.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. My mother-in-law wants to be able to hear her dog in her house while she is out to see if the dog is barking when she's not there.
Yes.
So we've seen lots of things like at Target, but they all are cameras. And she doesn't really care about...
She just wants the audio.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah, almost, you know, the Nest IQ cameras as example. I've been testing something from a company, this is not out yet, but will come out soon, called Lighthouse, that actually recognizes pets. So it does have a camera in it, although she could disable the camera. It does have a microphone and speaker. She could talk to Fluffy, but it has artificial intelligence. So you can say, notify me when the dog barks, or notify me when you see the dog. And she can... There's actually a button on the application software that shows all of the appearances of pets. It's kind of fun to play with. That's called Lighthouse, light.house. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How about one that's just audio? You know what? I'll tell you what. We will ask Dick D because he's all about dogs. He might know, okay?
Okay, yeah. I was thinking maybe like a baby monitor, but all the baby monitors also are cameras. So.
Yeah, she can disable the camera. I don't right. know.
She doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
she doesn't care if it has a camera or not. She was just thinking, you know,
she wants to hear the dog.
A treat, and it was about $250. She was thinking it might be something cheaper.
Let me ask. Well, wait a minute. Dick DiBartolo happens to be right here with me. Dickie D, do you know of a camera? I'm sorry, an audio.
No, not a camera.
An audio monitoring solution for pets.
You know, everyone has a camera in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to call and turn on the speakerphone, right?
There were. We tested one, but it had a camera, too, that was specifically for pets. It even had a pet feeder attached to it. So you could push a button and it would put food in the bowl. you could reward Fluffy. But
they still have those too. But they also have cameras.
They have cameras too. Everything I can think of.
Yeah. So you can see the dog come over to the feeder.
Yeah, Tristan, I'll keep looking. We'll keep listening. Okay.
Thanks, Leo.
Hey, take care. Good to talk to you.
You too.
Bye bye.
You too.
Good God, here's the hardest working man in show business, ladies and gentlemen. Dick DiBartolo. Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him the Gizwiz because he's got all these gizmos he brings us. He's the wizard of gizmos.
Yes, sir. I am indeed.
Hey, before we get into your gadget this week.
Yes, yes.
You had your annual, what do you call it, Gizfest?
No, but that's good. That's
you should
a
call
very
it Gizfest. Gizfest
is perfect. Yeah. Yes, we had our annual meetup. We had a lot of fun.
The Boat Basin Cafe
on
the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Yep.
And then we came back to Disneyland, and I ran the backyard trains, and it was great fun.
What
was great fun.
Well, I know Roberto was out there, and I know Myra was there a lot. And Chad went, and didn't Alex Gumpel show up as well?
Alex, he brought the TriCaster with him. I said, Alex, aren't they going to miss it? And he said, nah. Jamma B can do without it.
He can do it all with hand.
It was great fun.
This is something PepCom puts these events on. They're kind of like mini trade shows. We're actually going to the PepCom Christmas event in San Francisco in a couple of days. But you went to the one in New York City and you saw something interesting.
Yes, it is from Anchor, and I'm sure people on who listen to the show all the time know that we've talked about Anchor.
They started out
making external battery charges, and now they make a lot of replacement batteries for phones. But at the Holiday Spectacular, I saw the big Anchor sign, and I said to the guy, what is this thing? And he said, well, this is our new capsule, Nebula Capsule Pico Projector.
Wait a minute. Now I have to unpack that. Nebula Capsule Pico Projector. Pico means tiny.
Tiny, exactly.
What does it do?
And the funny thing is when I typed in Nebula Projector, Pico Projector, a big $1,000, I think it was either $600 or $1,000, which is a combination that they are working with Can and some other company. But now this is their own Pico projector. And you're right. It's the size of a soda can.
Ooh.
And it can project via Bluetooth. It has HDMI, AirPlay, Chromecast. It also has their own version of Android Nougat in there.
Nougat? So tell me what this is. What would I do with this?
Leo, this is perfect if you go to a hotel.
Yeah.
And two reasons. A hotel and if you're a traveling salesman. Okay? So you can use Bluetooth, any video, anything that's on your laptop, you can project on a wall up to 100 inches.
So it's like one of those PowerPoint projectors, but it's the size of a soda can.
A soda can with a 5-watt, 360-degree speaker inside, projects out the front, out the back, straight up if you want to lay in bed and watch movies on the ceiling. And it is wildly popular, even though it's not coming till December.
It's not out.
They were looking for $50,000. They announced it the day of the spectacular, which was, I think, the last day of September. By the time I got home, they had $250,000. Earlier today, they had $720,000. And the really cheapy versions are gone already. You could get in at the beginning for $199. Now it's $269. And when they're finally out, the guy at the event said they would be $349.
Ooh,
and so comes with a remote.
So these
remote
are
control.
These are about the same cost as a PowerPoint projector. They're just The point is, they're tiny.
They're tiny.
Now, how do
they're
they tiny. Look? I mean, could you really have a movie, party with this?
You know what? The video. I asked the guy. I said, "This is one of the brightest. It's 100 lumens. So for a little guy, that's the brightest I've seen for a guy that you can throw in a backpack with no problem." And the sound, this is sort of new at Pepcom, and I think it's probably a good idea. They don't let people do sounds at their booth.
So it has built-in speakers. Actually, that's built-in nice speakers. Because I've had projectors before where you have to bring up speakers, too, and that's
exactly.
Kind of annoying.
So, you put the soda can down, and if you're using it wirelessly, you don't hook up anything. It has AirPlay, Chromecast, Bluetooth. The only cable you is HDMI if you wanted to.
They've raised $717,000.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
So people clearly want whatever this is.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think the form factor is great because you can say the size of a soda can. You don't have to put on a tripod or anything. Put it on a table. And I love the fact that you tell it which way to project, front, back, up.
Now, when you saw it, did it were the lights dim in the
place? You know what? The lights were not dim, and they were projecting the Android opening screen.
And you could see it.
Very bright. That's what I said to him. This is really an incredibly, and also it was very close. So it has a very short throw, which is why it would be good in a hotel room.
Do you connect your phone with a wire or is it?
Nope, it's Bluetooth.
Wow.
So do that Bluetooth.
It must be using Wi-Fi for the actual video playback.
Bluetooth, well, it's Wi-Fi, Bluetooth.
Yeah, Bluetooth isn't fast enough except to maybe connect. Wow, that is very interesting. So right now, if I wanted to buy it,
You can get in for two. Is it still up there for $269?
$269 Indiegogo special.
Yeah. Okay.
That's, they say 22% off what they're going to charge. Wow. And you know, Anchor's a good company, so I trust Anchor. I'm always nervous about Indiegogo and Kickstarter. You and I have both been burnt a few times.
Well, you more than me.
A lot more. Yeah.
Yes.
I am not. I'm really resisting. I'm still waiting for the $600 Jibo robot I ordered 3 years ago. I mean, I'm still resisting any future purchases until I get all the stuff I bought before.
Okay. Well, we know this company, so chances are they're going to deliver, and they're a manufacturing giant.
I mean, they're, you know.
Yeah, and it's their own battery in there, so we know that that's going to be reliable.
Yeah. Dick DiBartolo's website, gizwiz.biz, that's where you'll find more about this particular device, the Nebula soda can-sized projector. Gizwiz.biz. You can also play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And you'll find more about his weekly podcast, gizwiz.tv, where he shows off many junky gadgets. This one's not junky. I'm impressed.
No, this is not junky. I have a fun one for you next week.
Yeah.
And remember that it's not a soda can. When you go home and you go, Ma, where's my capsule Pico projector? Oh, the soda can? I got 10 cents for it.
Let's see. Let me just run down the Indiegogo things I haven't received yet.
The fuse card,
your wallet in one card was, no. The Eco Rico scooter, nope. Toots the Unicorn, nope. Jibo, the world's first social robot for home, nope. I did get the kitchen knives I ordered in 2013, though. So I'm one for five.
Wow.
I'm not ordering anything again for a while. Oh, I want to wait until this stuff comes.
Okay. If I come up with something junky, I'm calling you first.
Oh, man.
My first investor.
Toots the Unicorn.
On the name alone, it ties
into your Twitter account. When somebody tweets you, little rainbow puffs of steam come out of its rear end.
Oh, we talked about it on the show. This is years ago.
Who wouldn't want that? $139. I got the Golden Horn edition.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Whoa.
Nothing.
Whoa.
Dickie D. Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Thank you all for being here. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Most of all, thanks to you for geeking out with me today. I hope you'll come back next time. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.